face paling as she, too, considered the destruction. How close they had come to a disaster. That Sartak had admitted to it told enough. He might be heir, but he wished his sister to know he, too, was not above making mistakes. That they had to think through any plan of action, however easy it might seem. Hassar, it seemed, got the point, and nodded. A cleared throat cut through the tent, and they all turned toward the open flaps to find one of the Dargon captains, his Sulde clenched in his mud-splattered hand. Someone was here to see them, the man stammered. Neither Royal asked who as they waved the man to let them in. A moment later, Kaol was glad he was sitting down. Nezrin breathed, "Holy gods." Kaol was inclined to agree, as Aelin Galathinius, Rowan Whitethorn, and several others entered the tent. They were mud-splattered, the Queen of Terrasen's braided hair far longer than Kaol had last seen. And her eyes. Not the soft yet fiery gaze, but something older, wearier. Kaol shot to his feet.
"I thought you were in Terrasen," he blurted.
All the reports had confirmed it. Yet here she stood, no army in sight. Three fey males, towering warriors as broad and muscled as Rowan, had entered, along with a delicate dark-haired human woman. But Aelin was only staring at him, staring and staring at him. No one spoke, as tears began sliding down her face. Not at his being here, Kaol realized, as he took up his cane and limped toward Aelin. But at him, standing, walking. The young queen let out a broken laugh of joy and flung her arms around his neck. Pain lanced down his spine at the impact, but Kaol held her right back, every question fading from his tongue. Aelin was shaking as she pulled away.
"I knew you would,"
she breathed, gazing down his body to his feet, then up again.
"I knew you'd do it."
"Not alone," he said thickly.
Kaol swallowed, releasing Aelin to extend an arm behind him, to the woman he knew stood there, a hand over the locket at her neck. Perhaps Aelin would not remember. Perhaps their encounter years ago had meant nothing to her at all. But Kaol drew Irene forward.
"Aelin, allow me to introduce..."
"Irene Towers,"
the queen breathed, as his wife stepped to his side. The two women stared at each other. Irene's mouth quivered as she opened the silver locket and pulled out a piece of paper. Hands trembling, she extended it to the queen. Aelin's own hands shook as she accepted the scrap.
"Thank you,"
Irene whispered. Kaol supposed it was all that really needed to be said. Aelin unfolded the paper, reading the note she'd written, seeing the lines from the hundreds of foldings and rereadings these past few years.
"I went to the Torre,"
Irene said, her voice cracking.
"I took the money you gave me and went to the Torre. And I became the heir apparent to the healer on high. And now I have to come back to do what I can. I taught every healer I could the lessons you showed me that night about self-defense. I didn't waste it. Not a coin you gave me or a moment of the time, the life you bought me."
Tears were rolling and rolling down Irene's face.
"I didn't waste any of it."
Aelin closed her eyes, smiling through her own tears. And when she opened them, she took Irene's shaking hands.
"Now it is my turn to thank you."
But Aelin's gaze fell upon the wedding band on Irene's finger. And when she glanced to Kaol, he grinned.
"No longer Irene Towers,"
Kaol said softly,
"but Irene Westfall."
Aelin let out one of those choked, joyous laughs, and Rowan stepped up to her side. Irene's head tilted back to take in the warrior's full height, her eyes widening, not only at Rowan's size, but at the pointed ears, the slightly elongated canines and tattoo. Aelin said,
"Then let me introduce you, Lady Westfall, to my own husband,
Prince Rowan Whitethorn Galathinius. For that was indeed a wedding band on the queen's finger, the emerald mud-splattered but bright. On Rowan's own hand, a golden ruby ring gleamed.
My mate, Aelin added, fluttering her lashes at the fey male.
Rowan rolled his eyes, yet couldn't entirely contain his smile as he inclined his head to Irene. Irene bowed, but Aelin snorted.
None of that, please, it'll go right to his immortal head.
Her grin softened as Irene blushed, and Aelin held up the scrap of paper.
May I keep this?
She eyed Irene's locket. Or does it go in there?
Irene folded the queen's fingers around the paper.
It is yours, as it always was. A piece of your bravery that helped me find my own.
Aelin shook her head, as if to dismiss the claim. But Irene squeezed Aelin's closed hand.
It gave me courage, the words you wrote. Every mile I traveled, every long hour I studied and worked, it gave me courage. I thank you for that, too.
Aelin swallowed hard, and Kaol took that as an excuse to sit again, his back giving a grateful tinge. He said to the queen,
There is another person responsible for this army being here.
He gestured to Nezrin, the woman already smiling at the queen.
The Rukin, you see, the army gathered, is as much because of Nezrin as it is because of me.
A spark lit Aelin's eyes, and both women met halfway in a tight embrace.
I want to hear the entire story, Aelin said. Every word of it.
Nezrin's subdued smile widened.
So you shall, but later.
Aelin clapped her on the shoulder and turned to the two royals still by the desk. Tall and regal, but as mud-splattered as the queen.
Kaol blurted,
Dorian.
Rowan answered,
Not with us.
He glanced to the royals.
They know everything, Nezrin said.
He's with Manon, Aelin said simply.
Kaol wasn't entirely sure whether to be relieved.
Hunting for something important.
The keys. Holy gods.
Aelin nodded. Later. He'd think on where Dorian might now be later. Aelin nodded again. The full story would come then, too.
Nezrin said, May I present Princess Hasar and Prince Sartak?
Aelin bowed, low.
You have my eternal gratitude, Aelin said.
And the voice that came out of her was indeed that of a queen. Any shock Sartak and Hasar had shown upon the queen bowing so low was hidden as they bowed back, the portrait of courtly grace.
My father, Sartak said, remained in the Khaganate to oversee our lands, along with our siblings Duva and Argon. But my brother Caution sails with the rest of the army. He was not 2 weeks behind us when we left.
Aelin glanced to Kaol, and he nodded. Something glittered in her eyes at the confirmation, but the queen jerked her chin at Hasar.
Did you get my letter?
The letter that Aelin had sent months ago, begging for aid and promising only a better world in return. Hasar picked at her nails.
Perhaps. I get far too many letters from fellow princesses these days to possibly remember or answer all of them.
Aelin smirked, as if the two of them spoke a language no one else could understand. A special code between two equally arrogant and proud women. But she motioned to her companions, who stepped forward.
Allow me to introduce my friends, Lord Gavriel of Dorinel.
A nod toward the tawny-eyed and golden-haired warrior who bowed. Tattoos covered his neck, his hands, but his every motion was graceful.
My uncle, of sorts,
Aelin added with a smirk at Gavriel. At Kaol's narrowed brows, she explained,
He's Adian's father.
Well, that explains a few things,
Nezrin muttered. The hair, the broad-planed face.
Yes, it was the same.
But where Adian was fire, Gavriel seemed to be stone.
Indeed, his eyes were solemn as he said,
"Adian is my pride."
Emotion rippled over Aelin's face, but she gestured to the dark-haired male. Not someone Kaol ever wanted to tangle with, he decided, as he surveyed the granite-hewn features, the black eyes and unsmiling mouth. Lorcan Salvatare, formerly of Dorinel and now a blood-sworn member of my court. As if that weren't a shock enough, Aelin winked at the imposing male. Lorcan scowled.
"We're still in the adjustment period,"
she loudly whispered, and Irene chuckled. Lorcan Salvatare. Kaol hadn't met the male this spring in Rifthold, but he'd heard all about him. That he'd been Maeve's most trusted commander, her most loyal and fierce warrior. That he'd wanted to kill Aelin. Hated Aelin. How this had come about, why she was not in Terrasen with her army?
"You too have a tale to tell," Kaol said.
"Indeed I do."
Aelin's eyes guttered, and Rowan put a hand on her lower back. Bad. Something terrible had occurred. Kaol scanned Aelin for any hint of it. He stopped when he noticed the smoothness of the skin at her neck, the lack of scars, the missing scars on her hands, her palms.
"Later,"
Aelin said softly. She straightened her shoulders, and another golden hair male came forward. Beautiful. That was the only way to describe him.
"Fenris, you know, I don't actually know your family name."
Fenris threw a roguish wink at the queen. "Moonbeam."
"It is not," Aelin hissed, choking on a laugh.
Fenris laid a hand on his heart.
"I am bloodsworn to you. Would I lie?"
Another bloodsworn fey male in her court. Across the tent, Sartak cursed in his own tongue, as if he'd heard of Lorcan and Gavriel and Fenris. Aelin gave Fenris a vulgar gesture that set Hassar chuckling and faced the royals. "They're barely housebroken, hardly fit for your fine company." Even Sartak smiled at that. But it was to the small, delicate woman that Aelin now gestured. "And the only civilized member of my court, Lady Elide Lochin of Perranth."
Perranth?
Kaol had combed through the family trees of Terrasen just this winter. Had seen the lists of so many royal households crossed out, victim to the conquest 10 years ago. Elide's name had been among them. Another Terrasen royal who had managed to evade Otterlin's butchers. The pretty young woman took a limping step forward and bobbed a curtsy to the royals. Her boots concealed any sign of the source of the injury, but Irene's attention shot right to her leg, her ankle.
"It's an honor to meet all of you,"
Elide said, her voice low and steady. Her dark eyes swept over them, cunning and clear, like she could see beneath their skin and bones to the souls beneath. Aelin wiped her hands. "Well, that's over and done with," she announced, and strode to the desk and map. "Shall we discuss where you all plan to march once we beat the living shit out of this army?" Chapter 49. Rowan had been speaking to the captain of their ship when the Rook had flown past. According to her mate, the Rook nearly slammed right into the ship thanks to the dense fog on the sea. A scout, from an armada to the south. A skeleton crew had remained amongst them, though the scout hadn't been privy to the royals' plans. All she knew was that the Coggins army had gone to Aniel. Where they would go after that, to Rifthold, to Eelway, had not been decided. So Aelin would help them decide, make sure that when this business with Aniel was over, the Coggins army marched northward, to Terrasen, and nowhere else. Whatever she needed to do to convince them, offer them in exchange for it, she'd pay it. Even if hauling ass to Aniel had meant delaying her own return to Terrasen, she supposed it'd be better to return with an army behind her than alone. Yet now, standing in the royals' war tent,
Aelin still couldn't quite believe just how many the Khagan had sent.
With more to come, Prince Sartak had claimed. They'd wended through the neatly organized tents and soldiers, both on foot, and the downright awe-inspiring cavalry. The Dargon, the legendary riders from the steppes of the Khaganate, the royal family's mother people, who had taken the continent for themselves. And then they'd seen the Rooks. And even miserable Lorkin had sworn in awe at the mighty, beautiful birds adorned with ornate armor, and the armed riders atop them. The scout had been one thing. An army of them had been glorious. A glance at Rowan told her that shrewd mind was already calculating a plan. So Aelin asked casually, flashing the royals a grin, "Where did you all plan on going after this?" Princess Hasar, as shrewd as Aelin's mate, returned her smile, a razor-sharp thing of little beauty. "Doubtless you're about to begin some scheme to convince us to go to Terrasen." The room tensed, but Aelin snorted. "Begin? Who says I'm not already in the thick of it?"
"Gods help us,"
Kaol muttered. Rowan echoed the sentiment. Hasar opened her mouth, but Prince Sartak cut in.
"Where we march will be decided after Aniel is secured."
The prince's face remained grave, calculating, but not cold. Aelin had decided within moments that she liked him, and liked him even more when it came out that he had just been crowned the Khagan's heir, with Nezrin as his potential bride. Potential, to Aelin's amusement, because Nezrin herself wasn't so keen on being empress of the mightiest empire in the world. But what Sartak had said. Elide blurted,
"You mean to not go to Terrasen?"
Aelin kept still, her fingers curling at her sides. Prince Sartak said carefully,
"It had been our initial plan to go north, but there might be other places like Aniel in need of liberation." "Terrasen needs aid,"
Rowan said, his face the portrait of steely calm as he surveyed their new allies and old friends. "And yet Terrasen has not called for it," Hasar countered, utterly unfazed by the wall of Fey warriors glowering at her. Exactly the sort of person Aelin had hoped she'd be when she wrote to her all those months ago. Kaol cleared his throat.
Gods above, Kaol was walking again,
and married to Irene Towers, who had healed him. A thread in a tapestry. That's what it had felt like the night she'd left the gold for Irene in Inish. Like pulling a thread in a tapestry and seeing just how far and wide it went. All the way to the southern continent, it seemed, and it had rippled back with an army and a healed, happy friend, or as happy as any of them might be at the moment. Aelin met Kaol's stare.
"Focus on winning this battle," he said,
nodding once in understanding at the fire she knew smoldered in her eyes.
"And then we shall decide."
Princess Hasar smirked at Aelin. "So be sure to impress us." Again, that tension rippled through the room. Aelin held the princess's stare, smiled slightly, and said nothing. Nezrin shifted on her feet, as if well aware what that silence could mean.
"How solid are the keep walls?"
Gavriel asked Kaol, gently steering the conversation away. Kaol rubbed at his jaw.
"They've withstood sieges before, but Morath has been hammering them for days. The battlements are solid enough, but another few blows from the catapults and towers might start coming down."
Rowan crossed his arms.
"The walls were breached today?"
"They were,"
Kaol said grimly.
"By a siege tower. The Rooks couldn't arrive in time to pull it down."
Nezrin cringed, but Sartak did not offer an apology. Kaol went on.
"We secured the walls, but the Volg soldiers cut down a number of our men. From Aniel, that is."
Aelin surveyed the map, blocking out the challenge of the fierce-eyed princess who was a mirror in so many ways.
"So how do we play it? Do we slam through the lines or pick them off one by one?"
Nezrin stabbed a finger onto the map, right atop the Silver Lake.
What if we pushed them to the lake itself?
Asar hummed, all traces of taunting gone.
Morath placed itself foolishly in their greed to sack the city. They didn't estimate being trampled by the Dargon or picked apart by the Rukin.
Aelin glanced sidelong to Rowan, found him already staring at her.
We'll convince them to go to Terrasen,
her mate said silently.
Kaol leaned forward, back quivering a bit, and ran a finger over the lake's western shore.
This section of the lake, unfortunately, is shallow 100 yards from the shore. The army might be able to wade out there, draw us into the water.
A few hours in that water, Irene countered, mouth a tight line, would kill them. The hypothermia would set in quickly, maybe within minutes, depending on the wind.
That's if the Vog fall victim to such things, Hassar said. They don't die like true men in most ways, and you claim they hail from a land of darkness and cold.
So the royals truly knew about their enemies then. We might push them into the water to find they don't care at all, and in doing so risk exposing our troops to the elements.
The princess jabbed the keep walls. We're better off pushing them right into the stone, breaking them apart against it.
Aelin was inclined to agree. Lorcan opened his mouth to say something no doubt unpleasant, but footsteps squelching in mud outside the tent had them whirling toward the entrance long before a pretty dark-haired young woman burst in, twin braids swinging.
You wouldn't believe.
She halted upon seeing Aelin, seeing the Fey males. Her mouth popped into an O. Nezrin chuckled.
Borte, meet.
Another set of steps in the mud, heavier and slower than Borte's quick movements. And then a young man stumbled in, his skin not the gold-kissed brown of Borte or the royals, but pale.
It's back,
he panted, gaping at Nezrin.
For days now, I swore I felt something, noted changes, but today it just all came back.
Nezrin angled her head, her curtain of dark hair sliding over an armored shoulder.
Who?
Borte squeezed the young man's arm.
Falcon. It's Falcon, Nezrin.
Prince Sartak stalked to Nezrin's side, graceful as any Fey warrior.
How?
But the young man had turned toward Aelin, eyes narrowing, as if trying to place her. Then he said,
The assassin from the market in Xandria.
Aelin arched a brow. Hopefully the horse I stole didn't belong to you. A cough from Fenris. Aelin threw the warrior a grin over her shoulder. The young man's eyes darted over her face, then landed on the enormous emerald on her finger, the even bigger ruby in Goldrin's hilt. Borte blurted to Nezrin. One minute we were eating dinner at the campfire, then the next, Falcon clutched his stomach like he was going to puke up his guts all over everyone. A glare from Falcon at Borte. And then, his face was young. He's young.
I was always young, Falcon muttered. I just didn't look it.
His gray eyes again found Aelin's.
I gave you a piece of spider silk.
For a heartbeat, the then and the now blended and wobbled.
The merchant,
Aelin murmured. She'd last seen him in the Red Desert, looking 20 years older.
You sold your youth to a Stygian spider. You two know each other?
Nezrin gaped.
The threads of fate weave together in strange ways, Falcon said,
then smiled at Aelin.
I never got your name.
Hassar chuckled from the other side of the desk.
You already know it, Shifter.
Before Falcon could figure it out, Fenris stepped forward.
Shifter?
But Nezrin said,
and Lysandra's uncle.
Aelin slumped into the chair beside Kaol's. Rowan laid a hand on her shoulder, and when she looked up, she found him near laughter.
What's so funny, exactly?
She hissed. Rowan smirked.
That for once, you are the one who gets knocked on your ass by a surprise.
Aelin stuck out her tongue,
Borte grinned, and Aelin winked at the girl. But Falcon said to Aelin and her companions,
"You know my niece."
His brother must have been a great deal older to have sired Lysandra. There was nothing of Falcon in her friend's face, though Lysandra had also forgotten her original form.
"Lysandra is my friend, and Lady of Caravere,"
Aelin said. "She is not with us," she added upon Falcon's hopeful glance toward the tent flaps. "She's in the north." Borte had gone back to studying the Fey males. Not their considerable beauty, but their size, their pointed ears, their weapons, and elongated canines. Aelin whispered conspiratorially to the girl,
"Make them roll over before you offer them a treat."
Lorkin glared, but Fenris shifted in a flash, the enormous white wolf filling the space. Hassar swore, Sartak backing away a step, but Borte beamed.
"You are all truly Fey, then."
Gavriel, ever the gallant knight, sketched a bow. Lorkin, the bastard, just crossed his arms. Yet Rowan smiled at Borte.
"Indeed we are."
Borte whirled to Aelin.
"Then you are Aelin Galathinius. You look just how Nezrin said."
Aelin grinned at Nezrin, the woman leaning against Sartak's side. "I hope you only said horrible things about me."
"Only the worst,"
Nezrin said with dead flatness, though her mouth twitched. But Falcon whispered,
"The queen,"
and fell to his knees. Hassar laughed.
"He never showed that sort of awe when he met us."
Sartak lifted his brows.
"You told him to turn into a rat and scuttle away."
Aelin hoisted up Falcon by the shoulder. "I can't have my friend's uncle kneeling on the ground, can I?"
"You said you were an assassin."
Falcon's eyes were so wide, the whites around them gleamed.
"You stole horses from the Lord of Xandria."
"Yes, yes," Aelin said, waving a hand. "It's a long story, and we're in the middle of a war council, so..."
"Piss off," Falcon finished. Aelin laughed, but glanced to Nezrin and Sartak. The former jerked her chin to Falcon.
"He's become our spy of sorts. He joins us in these meetings."
Aelin nodded, then winked at the shifter. "I suppose you didn't need me to slay that Stygian spider after all." But Falcon tensed, his attention going to Nezrin and Sartak, to Borte, still gawking at the Fey males.
"Do they know?"
Aelin had a feeling she'd need to sit down again. Kaol indeed patted the chair beside him, earning a chuckle from Irene. Doing herself a favor, Aelin indeed sat, Rowan taking up his place behind her, both of his hands coming to rest on her shoulders. His thumb ran along the nape of her neck, then drifted over the mating marks again, scarring one side, thanks to the seawater they'd used to seal them. But as her muscles soothed beneath that loving touch, her soul with it, her breath remained tight. It didn't get any better when Nezrin said,
"The Stygian spiders are Volg."
Silence.
"We encountered their kin, the Karen Kui, deep in the Dagul Fells. They came into this world through a temporary crack between realms, and remained afterward to guard the entrance, should it ever reappear."
"This cannot end well," Fenris muttered. Elid hummed her agreement.
"They feed on dreams and years and life," Falcon said, a hand on his own chest. "As my friends have said, the Volg do."
Aelin had seen Volg princes drain a human of every last drop of youth and vigor, and leave only a dried corpse behind. She wouldn't put it past the spiders to have a similar gift.
"What does this mean for the war?"
Rowan asked, his thumbs still stroking Aelin's neck.
"Will they join Erewhon's forces is the better question."
Lorkin challenged with a face like stone.
"They do not answer to Erewhon,"
Nezrin said quietly. And Aelin knew. Knew from the look Kaol gave her, the sympathy and fear. Knew in her bones before Nezrin even finished.
The Stygian spiders? The Karen Kui? Answer to their Volg queen. The only Volg queen. To Maeve.
Chapter 50. Rowan's hands tightened on Aelin's shoulders as the words settled into her, hollow and cold.
Maeve is a Volg queen?
He breathed. Aelin said nothing. Couldn't find the words. Her power roiled. She didn't feel it. Nezrin nodded solemnly.
Yes. The Karen Kui told us the entire history.
And so Nezrin did as well. Of how Maeve had somehow found a way into this world, fleeing or bored with her husband Orcus, Erewhon's elder brother. Of how Erewhon, Orcus, and Mantix had torn apart worlds to find her, Orcus's missing wife, and only halted here because the Fae had risen to challenge them. Fae led by Maeve, whom the Volg Kings did not know or recognize in the form she had taken. The life she had crafted for herself. The minds of all the Fae who had existed that she had ripped into, convincing them that there had been three queens, not two. Including the minds of Mab and Mora, the two sister queens who had ruled Dorinel. Including Brannan himself.
The spiders claimed, Nezrin went on, that even Brannan didn't know. Even now in the afterworld, he doesn't know. That was how deep Maeve's powers went into his mind, into all their minds. She made herself their true queen. The words, the truth, pelted Aelin, one after another.
Elide's face was white as death.
But she fears the healers.
A nod toward Irene.
She keeps that owl, you said, an enslaved Fae healer. Should the Volg ever discover her?
For that was the other piece of it. The other thing Nezrin had revealed. Kaol and Irene adding in their own accounts. The Volg were parasites, and Irene could cure their human hosts of them. Had done so for Princess Duva. And might be able to do so with many other enslaved with rings or collars. But what had infested Duva? A Volg princess. Aelin leaned back into her chair, her head resting against the solid wall of Rowan's body. His hands shook against her shoulders, shook as he seemed to realize what exactly had ripped into his mind, where Maeve's power had come from that allowed her to do so, why she remained deathless and ageless and had outlasted any other, why Maeve's power was darkness.
It is also why she fears fire.
Sartak said, jerking his chin to Aelin.
Why she fears you so.
And why she'd wanted to break her. To be just like that enslaved healer bound in owl form at her side.
I thought. I managed to cut her once,
Aelin said at last. That quiet, ancient darkness pushed in, dragging her down, down, down.
I saw her blood flow black.
Then it changed to red. She blew out a breath, pulling out of the darkness, the silence that wanted to devour her whole, made herself straighten, peer at Fenris. You said that her blood tasted ordinary to you when you swore the oath. The white wolf shifted back into his fey body. His bronze skin was ashen, his dark eyes swimming with dread.
It did.
Rowan growled,
it didn't taste any different to me, either.
A glamour like the form she maintains,
Gavriel mused. Nezrin nodded.
From what the spiders said, it seems entirely possible that she would be able to convince you that her blood looked and tasted like Fae blood.
Fenris made a sound like he was going to be sick. Aelin was inclined to do the same. And from far away, a memory that was not a memory stirred. Of summer nights spent in a forest glen, Maeve instructing her. Telling her a story about a queen who walked between worlds. Who had not been content in the realm in which she'd been born. And had found a way to leave it, using the lost knowledge of ancient wayfarers. World walkers. Maeve had told her.
perhaps a skewed, biased tale. But she'd told her.
Why?
Why do it at all? Some way to win her? Or to make her hesitate, should it ever come to this?
But Maeve hates the Volg Kings,
Elide said. And even from the silent, drifting place to which Aelin had gone, she could see the razor-sharp mind churning behind Elide's eyes.
She's hidden for this long. Surely she wouldn't ally with them.
She ran at the chance to get hold of a Volg caller, Fenris said darkly. Seemed convinced that she could control the prince inside it. Not only through Maeve's power, but because she was a demon queen. Aelin forced herself to take another breath. Another. Her fingers curled, gripping an invisible weapon. Lorkin had not uttered a word. Had done nothing but stand there, pale and silent. As if he'd stopped being in his body, too.
We don't know her plans, Nezrin said. The Karen Kui have not seen her for millennia, and only hear whisperings carried by lesser spiders. But they still worship her, and wait for her return.
Kaol met Aelin's stare, his gaze questioning.
Aelin said quietly, I was Maeve's prisoner for 2 months. Utter silence in the tent.
Then she explained, all of it. Why she was not in Terrasen, who now fought there, where Dorian and Manon had gone. Aelin swallowed as she finished, leaning into Rowan's touch.
Maeve wished me to reveal the location of the 2 word keys.
Wanted me to hand them over. But I managed to get them away before she took me.
To Dorinel.
She wanted to break me to her will. To use me to conquer the world, I thought. But it perhaps now seems she wanted to use me as a shield against the Volg, to guard her always.
The words tumbled out, heavy and sharp.
I was her captive until nearly a month ago. She nodded toward her court. When I got free, they found me again.
Silence fell again, her new companions at a loss. She didn't blame them.
Then Hasar hissed,
We'll make the bitch pay for that too, won't we?
Aelin met the princess's dark stare.
Yes, we will.
The truth had slammed into Rowan like a physical blow.
Maeve was Volg.
A Volg queen, whose estranged husband had once invaded this world and, if Kaol was correct, wished to enter it again should Erewhon succeed in opening the word gate. He knew his cadre, or whatever they were now called, was in shock. Knew he himself had fallen into some sort of stupor.
The female they'd served, bowed to.
Volg. They had been so thoroughly deceived they had not even tasted it in her blood. Fenris looked like he was going to empty the contents of his stomach onto the tent floor. For him, the truth would be the most horrendous. Lorkin's face remained cold and blank. Gabriel kept rubbing his jaw, his eyes swimming with dismay. Rowan loosed a long breath.
A Volg queen.
That's who had held his fire heart. What sort of power had tried to break into her mind? What power had broken into Rowan's mind, all their minds, if she could glamour her blood to look and taste ordinary? He felt the tension rising in Aelin. A raging storm that nearly hummed into his hands as he gripped her shoulders. Yet her flames made no appearance. They hadn't shown so much as an ember these weeks, despite how hard they'd trained. Occasionally, he'd spy Goldrin's ruby gleaming while she held it, as if fire glowed in the heart of the stone. But nothing more. Not even when they'd tangled in their bed on the ship, when his teeth had found that mark on her neck. Elide surveyed them all, their silence, and said to their new companions,
Perhaps we should determine a plan of action regarding tomorrow's battle,
and give them time later tonight to sort through this colossal mess. Kaol nodded. We brought a trunk of books with us, he said to Aelin. From the Torre? They're all full of word marks.
Aelin didn't so much as blink.
but Kaol finished.
If we get through this battle, they're yours to peruse, in case there's anything in them that might help.
Against Erewhon. Against Maeve. Against his mate's terrible fate. Aelin just vaguely nodded. So Rowan forced himself to shove away the shock and disgust and fear, and focus upon the plan ahead. Only Gavriel seemed able to do the same, Fenris staying where he was, and Lorcan just staring and staring at nothing. Aelin remained in her chair, simmering, roiling. They planned it quickly and efficiently. They would return with Kaol and Irene to the keep to help with the fighting tomorrow. The Khaganate royals would push from here, Nezrin and Prince Sartak leading the Rooks, and Princess Hasar commanding the foot soldiers and Dargon cavalry. A brilliantly trained, lethal group. Rowan had already marked the Dargon soldiers, with their fine horses and armor, their spears and crested helmets, while they'd strode for this tent, and breathed a sigh of relief at their skill. Perhaps the last sigh of relief he'd have in this war. Certainly if the Khagan's forces hadn't yet decided where they would take this army afterward. He supposed it was fair. So many territories were now in Morath's path. But when this battle was over, he'd make damn sure they marched northward. To Terrasen. But tomorrow. Tomorrow they'd hammer Morath's legion against the keep walls, Kaol and Rowan leading the men from inside, picking off enemy soldiers. Aelin didn't volunteer to do anything. Didn't indicate that she'd heard them. And when they'd all deemed the plan sound, along with a contingency plan should it go awry, Nezrin only said,
"We'll find you Rooks to carry you back to the keep."
Before Aelin stormed into the frigid night, Rowan barely keeping up with her. No embers trailed her. Mud did not hiss beneath her boots. There was no fire at all. Not a spark. As if Maeve had snuffed out that flame, made her fear it. Hate it. Aelin cut through the neatly organized tents, past horses and their armored riders, past foot soldiers around campfires, past the Rook riders and their mighty birds, who filled him with such awe he had no words for it. All the way to the eastern edge of the camp and the plains that stretched past, the space wide and hollow after the closeness of the army. She didn't stop until she reached a stream they'd crossed only hours ago. It was nearly frozen over, but a stomp of her boot had the ice cracking, breaking free to reveal dark water kissed with silvery starlight. Then she fell to her knees and drank. Drank and drank, cupping the water to her mouth. It had to be cold enough to burn, but she kept at it until she braced her hands on her knees and said,
"I can't do this."
Rowan sank to a knee. The shield he'd kept around her while she stalked here, sealing out the cold wind off the open plain.
I can't.
She took a shuddering breath and covered her face with her wet hands. Gently, Rowan gripped her wrists and lowered them.
"You do not face this alone."
Anguish and terror filled those beautiful eyes, and his chest tightened to the point of pain as she said,
"It was a fool's shot against Erewhon, but against him and Maeve? She gathered an army to her, is likely bringing that army to Terrasen right now. And if Erewhon summons his two brothers, if the other kings return?"
"He needs the two other keys to do that. He doesn't have them."
Her fingers curled, digging into her palms hard enough that the tang of her blood filled the air.
"I should have gone after the keys right away, not come here, not done this."
"It is Dorian's task now, not yours. He will not fail at it."
"It is my task, and always has been."
"We made the choice to come here, and we will stick to that decision,"
he snarled, not bothering to temper his tone.
"If Maeve is indeed bringing her army to Terrasen, then it only confirms that we were right to come here. That we must convince the Khagan's forces to go northward after this. It is the only chance we stand of succeeding."
Aelin ran her hands through her hair.
Streams of blood stained the gold. I cannot win against them. Against a Volg king and queen.
Her voice turned to a rasp.
They have already won.
They have not.
And though Rowan hated each word, he growled.
And you survived 2 months against Maeve with no magic to protect you. 2 months of a Volg queen trying to break into your head, Aelin, to break you.
Aelin shook. She did, though.
Rowan waited for it. Aelin whispered.
I wanted to die by the end.
Before she ever threatened me with the collar. And even now I feel like someone has ripped me from myself. Like I'm at the bottom of the sea. And who I am, who I was, is far up at the surface. And I will never get back there again. He didn't know what to say. What to do other than to gently pull her fingers from her palms.
Did you buy the swagger? The arrogance?
She demanded, voice breaking.
Did the others? Because I've been trying to. I've been trying like hell to convince myself that it's real, reminding myself I only need to pretend to be how I was just long enough.
Long enough to forge the lock and die. He said softly,
I know, Aelin.
He hadn't bought the winks and smirks for a heartbeat. Aelin let out a sob that cracked something in him.
I can't feel me, myself, anymore. It's like she snuffed it out, ripped me from it. She, and Cairn, and everything they did to me.
She gulped down air. And Rowan wrapped her in her arms and pulled her onto his lap.
I'm so tired, she wept. I'm so, so tired, Rowan.
I know.
He stroked her hair.
I know.
It was all there really was to say. Rowan held her until her weeping eased, and she lay still, nestled against his chest.
I don't know what to do,
she whispered.
You fight,
he said simply.
We fight. Until we can't anymore, we fight.
She sat up, but remained on his lap, staring into his face with a rawness that destroyed him. Rowan laid a hand on her chest, right over that burning heart.
Fire heart.
A challenge and a summons. She placed her hand atop his, warm despite the frigid night, as if that fire had not yet gone out entirely. But she only gazed up at the stars, to the Lord of the North standing watch.
We fight,
she breathed. Aelin found Fenris by a quiet fire, gazing into the crackling flames. She sat on the log beside him, raw and open and trembling, but the salt of her tears had washed away some of it. Steadied her. Rowan had steadied her, and still did, as he kept watch from the shadows beyond the fire. Fenris lifted his head, his eyes as hollow as she knew hers had been.
Whenever you need to talk about it,
she said, her voice still hoarse.
I'm here.
Fenris nodded, his mouth a tight line.
Thank you.
The camp was readying for their departure, but Aelin scooted closer and sat beside him in silence for long minutes. 2 healers, marked only by the white bands around their biceps, hurried past, arms full of bandages. Aelin tensed, focused on her breathing. Fenris marked her line of sight.
They were horrified, you know,
he said quietly.
Every time she brought them in to fix you.
The 2 healers vanished around a tent. Aelin flexed her fingers, shaking the lightness from them.
It didn't stop them from doing it.
They didn't have a choice.
She met his dark stare. Fenris's mouth tightened.
No one would have left you in those states. No one.
Broken and bloody and burned. She gripped Goldrin's hilt. Helpless.
They defied her in their own way.
Fenris went on.
Sometimes, she'd order them to bring you back to consciousness. Often, they claimed they couldn't, that you'd fallen too deeply into oblivion. But I knew, I think Maeve did too, that they put you there, for as long as possible, to buy you time. She swallowed. Did she punish them? I don't know. It was never the same healers. Maeve likely had likely ripped their minds apart for their defiance. Aelin's grip tightened on the sword at her side. Helpless. She had been helpless, as so many in this city, and Harrison, in this continent, were helpless. Goldrin's hilt warmed in her hand. She wouldn't be that way again, for whatever time she had left. Gavriel padded up beside Rowan, took one look at the Queen and Fenris, and murmured,
"Not the news we needed to hear."
Rowan closed his eyes for a heartbeat.
"No, it was not."
Gavriel settled a hand on Rowan's shoulder.
"It changes nothing in some ways."
"How?"
"We served her. She was not what Aelin is, what a queen should be. We knew that long before we knew the truth. If Maeve wants to use what she is against us, to ally with Morath, then it changes things. But the past is over. Done with, Rowan. Knowing Maeve is Volg or just a wretched person doesn't change what happened."
"Knowing a Volg queen wants to enslave my mate and nearly did so changes a great deal."
"But we know what Maeve fears, why she fears it," Gavriel countered,
his tawny eyes bright.
"Fire and the healers. If Maeve comes with that army of hers, we are not defenseless."
It was true. Rowan could have cursed himself for not thinking of it already. Another question formed, though.
"Her army," Rowan said. "It's made up of Fae."
"So was her armada," Gavriel said warily. Rowan ran a hand through his hair.
"Will you be able to live with it? Fighting our own people?"
"Killing them.
Will you?"
Gavriel countered. Rowan didn't answer. Gavriel asked after a moment,
"Why didn't Aelin offer me the blood oath?"
The male hadn't asked these weeks. And Rowan wasn't sure why Gavriel inquired now, but he gave him the truth.
"Because she won't do it until Adian has taken the oath first. To offer it to you before him. She wants Adian to take it first.
In case he doesn't wish me to be near his kingdom.
So that Adian knows she placed his needs before her own."
Gavriel bowed his head.
"I would say yes, if she offered."
"I know." Rowan clapped his oldest friend on the back.
"She knows too."
The lion gazed northward.
"Do you think? We haven't heard any news from Terrasen."
"If it had fallen, if Adian had fallen, we would know. People here would know." Gavriel rubbed at his chest.
"We've been to war. He's been to war. Fought on battlefields as a child, gods be damned."
Rage flickered over Gavriel's face. Not at what Adian had done, but what he'd been made to do by fate and misfortune. What Gavriel had not been there to prevent.
"But I still dread every day that passes and we hear nothing. Dread every messenger we see."
A terror Rowan had never known, different from his fear for his mate, his queen. The fear of a father for his child. He didn't allow himself to look toward Aelin, to remember his dreams while hunting for her, the family he'd seen, the family they'd make together.
"We must convince the Khaganate royals to march northward when this battle is over,"
Gavriel swore softly. Rowan nodded.
"If we can smash this army tomorrow and convince the royals that Terrasen is the only course of action, then we could indeed be heading north soon. You might be fighting at Adian's side by Yulmas."
Gabriel's hands clenched at his sides, tattoos spreading over his knuckles.
If he will allow me that honor.
Rowan would make Adian allow it. But he only said,
Gather Elide and Lorcan. The Rooks are almost ready to depart.
Chapter 51. Lorcan lingered by the edge of the Rook encampment, barely taking in the magnificent birds or their armored riders as they settled down for the night. A few, he knew, would not yet find their rest, instead bearing them and needed supplies back to the keep towering over the city and plain. He didn't care. Didn't marvel that he was soon to be airborne on one of those incredible beasts. Didn't care that tomorrow they would all take on the dark army gathered beyond. He'd fought in more battles, more wars, than he cared to remember. Tomorrow would be little different, save for the demons they'd slay rather than men or fae. Demons like his former queen, apparently. He had offered himself to her, had wanted her, or believed he did. And she had laughed at him. He didn't know what it meant about her, about himself. He'd thought his darkness, Hellas's gifts, had been drawn to her, that they'd been matched. Perhaps the Dark God had wanted him not to swear fealty to Maeve, but to kill her, to get close enough to do so. Lorcan didn't adjust his cape against the gust of frigid air off the distant lake. Rather, he leaned into the cold, into the ice on the wind, as if it might rip away the truth.
We're leaving.
Elide's low voice cut through the roaring silence of his thoughts.
The Rooks are ready, she added.
There was no fear or pity on her face, her black hair gilded by the torches and campfires. Of all of them, she'd mastered the news with little difficulty, stepping up to the desk as if she'd been born on a battlefield.
I didn't know,
he said, voice strained. Elide knew what he meant.
We have bigger things to worry about anyway.
He took a step toward her.
I didn't know,
he said again. She tipped her head back to study his face and pursed her mouth, a muscle ticking in her jaw.
Do you want me to give you some sort of absolution for it?
I served her for nearly 500 years. 500 years. And I just thought her to be immortal and cold.
That sounds like the definition of a Vogue to me.
He bared his teeth.
You live for eons and see what it does to you, lady.
I don't see why you're so shocked. Even with her being immortal and cold, you loved her. You must have accepted those traits. What difference does it make what we call her, then?
I didn't love her.
You certainly acted like you did.
Lorcan snarled.
Why is that the point you keep returning to, Elide? Why is it the one thing you cannot let go of?
Because I'm trying to understand how you could come to love a monster.
Why?
He pushed into her space. She didn't balk one step. Indeed, her eyes were blazing as she hissed.
Because it will help me understand how I did the same.
Her voice snagged on the last words. And Lorcan stilled as they settled into them. He'd never had anyone who...
Is it a sickness?
She demanded.
Is it something broken within you?
Elide.
Her name was a rasp on his lips. Lorcan dared reach a hand for her, but she pulled out of reach.
If you think that because you swore the blood oath to Aelin, it means anything for you and me, you're sorely mistaken. You're immortal, I'm human. Let us not forget that little fact, either.
Lorcan nearly recoiled at the words, their horrible truth. He was 500 years old. He should walk away. He shouldn't be so damned bothered by any of this. And yet Lorcan snarled.
You're jealous. That's what truly eats away at you.
Elide barked a laugh that he'd never heard before. Cruel and sharp.
Jealous? Jealous of what? That demon you served?
She squared her shoulders, a wave cresting before it smashed into the shore.
The only thing that I am jealous of, Lorkin, is that she is rid of you. Lorkin hated that the words landed like a blow, that he had no defenses left where she was concerned.
I'm sorry, he said. For all of it, Elide.
There. He'd said it and laid it out before her.
I'm sorry,
he repeated. But Elide's face did not warm. I don't care, she said, turning on her heel. And I don't care if you walk off that battlefield tomorrow. Jealous? The idea of it, of being jealous of Maeve for commanding Lorkin's affection for centuries. Elide limped toward the readying party of rooks, grinding her teeth so hard her jaw ached. She was almost to the first of the saddled birds when a voice said behind her,
You should have ignored him.
Elide halted, finding Gavriel following.
Pardon me?
The lion's usually warm face was grave, disapproving.
You might as well have kicked a male already down.
Elide hadn't uttered a cross word to Gavriel in all the time she'd known him, but she said,
I don't see how this is any of your business.
I have never heard Lorkin apologize for anything. Even when Maeve whipped him for a mistake, he did not apologize to her.
And that means he earns my forgiveness?
No. But you have to realize that he swore the blood oath to Aelin for you. For no one else. So he could remain near you. Even knowing well enough that you will have a mortal lifespan.
The birds shifted on their feet, rustling their wings in anticipation of flight. She knew. Had known at the moment he'd knelt before Aelin. Weeks later, Elide hadn't known what to do with it, the knowledge that Lorkin had done this for her. The longing to talk to him, to work with him as they had. She'd hated herself for it, for not trying to hold on to her anger longer. It was why she'd gone after him tonight.